Hey, you're listening to the wrong podcast. Topics today include pronunciation, proselytization, and praise.
Wrong!
It's the wrong podcast, but we'll make it right.
Hi, I'm Tim. I'm here to talk about politics, culture, religion, sports, and anything else you're not allowed to talk about in polite company. Issue number one, Turbo Boost. If you're anywhere close to my age, you remember the show Knight Rider. I loved Knight Rider. It was the best thing that could ever have been put on TV as far as I was concerned, except for one thing. One thing was better, and that was the A-Team. I'm pretty sure I would hate both of these shows today. There's no way I'd watch these as adults. If they brought these shows back, there is like a 10% chance I watch more than one episode of either one of them. But when Knight Rider came out, I loved it. And if you don't remember, Knight Rider is about this guy played by David Hasselhoff, and he fought crime with the help of a smart car. It was a car with AI in it. I don't know if they said it was AI or just a computer, but the car's name was Kit. Kit had a personality. He was kind of snarky, and he had a particular accent. Do you remember Kit's accent? What is that accent? Is it British? It's not British, it's American. But it's not normal American. What is that? I talked to AI about this. That's the irony of this. While in my car, in fact. While in my car, I pulled up Gemini. I said, "Hey Google, what kind of accent is Kit from the TV show Knight Rider?" And I know for a certain percentage of you. So it just happened to me too. I knew that that would happen to some of you. When I said that, it caused your phone to answer that question. And I didn't even think about how my phone would be sitting here while I asked that question. And my phone was very eager to tell me too. What kind of accent is that? It was Kit. And it didn't even occur to me that I was talking to an AI in my car about a car-based AI.
And isn't it ironic? Don't you think?
So the accent is called, it's a mid-Atlantic accent, or sometimes it's called a transatlantic accent. And it's basically this mashup of English and British. It's parts of both. You decide if it's the best parts or the worst parts. But it gives you this air of sophistication.
There's no reason for increased volume. I am scanning your interrogatives quite satisfactorily. I am the voice of Knight Industry 2000's microprocessor, KITT for easy reference, a Kit if you prefer.
Probably the person most well known for this kind of accent, and I truly believe she wasn't putting it on. It was really the way she talked, and that was Katharine Hepburn.
You're so much thought and so little feeling, Professor.
Oh, I am I?
Yes, you am, are you? Your intolerance infuriates me. I should think that of all people, a writer would need tolerance. The fact is, you can't be a first-rate writer or a first-rate human being until you've learned to have some small regard for human Aren't the geraniums pretty, Professor?
And I didn't start this conversation to tell you about the accent. I was curious about it while I was reading the story, and I thought you might be as well. The story is that there is a car museum in Illinois that has a replica of Kit. Kit was a Pontiac Trans Am that was kind of modified. It had this little red strobe light thing in the middle that went back and forth. I'm not sure what that red light was supposed to be doing, but it always went vroom, 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 vroom. And I don't know, it was a sensor or just told you that Kit was thinking about something. I don't know. But this car museum in Illinois, Illinois? You don't say the S in Illinois. You just say Illinois. This car museum, they have a replica of Kit. They don't have one of the actual production cars. They just made Kit. They bought their own Trans Am and modified it to look like the TV show car. And apparently there were like 20 cars that were made for the TV show that did the turbo boost thing. It would fly in the air and jump it. So they had to have the stunt version and the nice waxed floor model version. They made 20 of these cars. There's 5 of them left. But there are a ton of people who have made replicas of Kit, which is the thing to do. If you get inherited a Pontiac Trans Am, you need to trick that out like Kit. That is absolutely the right thing to do. So this museum has a car that looks like Kit, and the license plate says Knight because that's what Kit's license plate said. And they got a ticket from the state of New York because their car was driving around going 10 miles over the speed limit. And New York tracked them down and sent them a ticket. The only problem is that this car does not run. It sits in a museum. It's not driving around the state of New York. It's sitting there. Somebody else has a replica of Kit with the California license plate Knight, and they were driving around and they were going 10 miles over the speed limit. And for some reason, the state of New York sent the ticket to this museum in Illinois. And what's really funny about this is that somebody actually owns the personalized license plate in California that says the word Knight, K-N-I-G-H-T. And they don't have a replica of Kit. They've got some 2012 Mercedes-Benz, and their last name happens to be Knight. And I don't know how somebody let this license plate go free, if they originally owned it from the TV show, or if it was always fake license plates from the get-go. But this seems like a great license plate to own, and if you're going to own it, you better buy a Pontiac Trans Am. Not some 2012 Mercedes-Benz. That's dumb. Anyway, the state of New York didn't send it to the person in California with the actual license plate with a different car. They sent it to some museum in Illinois that had an unregistered car that had some novelty license plate on it. It doesn't make any sense. Somebody had to do some work to figure out where to send this speeding ticket. And the best they could come up with was this museum. They should have just asked AI where to send the speeding ticket. Issue number 2, Freedom from Religion. Listener Robert, he sent me an article from the Wall Street Journal, and it was written by this man named Avatans Kumar, and he was representing the country of India. And what you may not know about India is that their current government is, I guess a good way to describe them is Hindu nationalism. So we here in the United States have this rise of Christian nationalism. Nationalism is on the rise everywhere in the world. And of course in India, any sort of nationalism would be tied to Hinduism. And because of their Hindu nationalism, they have made it difficult or illegal to change religions. They say, nope, can't happen here. If you're Hindu, you're Hindu until you die. You're not allowed to switch to Islam or Christianity or any other faith. And the Religious Rights Commission of the United States government and many other religious rights organizations have criticized India for this. And Kumar was tasked with defending India or giving a different take on this. And he says, hey, you need to have Hindus on these commissions, because we don't believe in proselytization. And this is the kicker line from his opinion piece in the Wall Street Journal, which I will link to. You can find that link in the show notes. You should just know that the Wall Street Journal does not want you to read anything. unless you've paid for it. But if you have a Wall Street Journal subscription, this is available to you. So this is what Mr. Kumar has to say.
From the perspective of non-proselytizing religions, people have a right to stay in their religion and not be bothered by those who wish to convert them.
Have you ever noticed that the British have a certain way of saying the word stupid? Excuse me, it's not the British, it's not the Welsh people or the Scottish people, it is specifically the English people. The English people have a way of saying the word stupid that just, it cuts. Oh, it cuts so hard. The way that stupid. I can't even do it. But if I could, that is what I would say about this article. This is stupid. I'm not saying Mr. Kumar is stupid, because he is not. He's a clearly an intelligent man based on the quality of his writing. And I am not saying India is stupid. I am not saying Hinduism is stupid. I am saying this article is stupid. It is stupid, stupid, stupid. And it is unlike me to say something like that. I want to be open. I want to be intellectually humble. I want to hear people out because maybe I'm missing something. And for the sake of my own soul, I don't want to use the word stupid because it deteriorates my own soul. But I have to in this instance because this is stupid. Let me just point out that this is contradictory. It's self-contradictory. He has this opinion about religion, that religion should not proselytize. And he is sharing with everybody what should change in culture and laws about other religions. He's saying, hey, if you're a part of a religion that proselytizes, you shouldn't be allowed to do that anymore. You should stop doing that. We should institute ways to make sure that you practice your religion in a different way. So he is sharing his opinion about religions and saying that other people should not share their opinion about religions. That's his opinion about religion, that nobody should share their opinions about religions. Like I said, the word stupid comes to mind. It's self-contradictory. You can't tell people how to practice their religion while saying that they should not tell other people how to practice the religion. Just think about it for half a second. And he is not the only person I've ever heard say this. This is a very popular idea from non-religious woke people. I've come across it before. Not the first time I've heard this. Just didn't expect it from somebody who's getting published in the Wall Street Journal. The second problem with this idea that people shouldn't be bothered by those who wish to convert them. And let me just be clear. I get it that you don't think people should be compelled. You don't think people should be forced to change their religion. I agree with you. I think that would be wrong. I think that would violate people's freedom of religion. That would be bad. I don't mind saying that that shouldn't happen. I think that's a very bad idea. You should not force somebody into your religion. Proselytizing is not forcing people. Proselytizing is talking. It's evangelism. It's sharing what you believe to be true. And the problem with saying this about religion is that it is very difficult to define what a religion is. You have in your head the center place of all the things that might be considered a religion. You might be thinking of Catholicism or Hinduism or Islam or Christianity, but once you start exploring the bounds of religion, it gets very hard to define what a religion is. It's not just the 4 to 8 main religions that you have in your head. There's all kinds of religions that don't fit neatly into the box of what you think of as a religion. For example, people have done lots of studies. They've done academic research into how people practice veganism and how similar it is to a religious practice for many people, for many vegans. Same thing with CrossFit. Same thing with college football and the anti-vax movement and QAnon conspiracies. These all fit a very religious framework for a lot of people who are really into them. It is indistinguishable what a religion is and how certain people live out their veganism or their vegetarianism or how they follow their favorite college football team. It's very similar to a religion. It's very similar to how people follow Jesus Christ. And I'm not saying they're all the same thing. I'm for sure not saying they're all equal. I'm sure saying the way that people place these things in their life is religious. And so if somebody wants to tell me about how great Notre Dame football is, I can't tell them, no, you're being religious. You're not allowed to tell me about that thing. You're not allowed to tell me how great it is, how much it enhances your life to follow this football team every Saturday. You're pressuring me to do the same thing. It's a dumb argument. Think for just half a second before saying things like this, please. Hey, it's time. What are the rules?
Oh, what are the rules? What are the rules? Don't touch my fries or my garden tools. Oh, what are the rules? Yeah, I got my quirks. Follow them closely.
Have you noticed that sometimes when things switch over in a system, everything's a little bit worse for a while? That is exactly what's happening with me and my phone. I have an Android, and recently they switched the Google Assistant over to Gemini, their AI tool. And so now AI wants to help me with all the things that my phone had already figured out how to do. And the thing that's driving me nuts right now is that every time I ask it to help me text the lovely Wendy while I'm driving in the car, it says, you have multiple numbers here. Which number do you want to use? Do you want to use the mobile number or this other number? Never, ever before did it ever ask me which number it wanted. It always knew to text the mobile number. And I said, I want you to always text the mobile number. To which Gemini responded, great, I'll remember to do that. If there's other things you want me to remember, you can find them in the saved memory function or something or other like that. You can see everything you tell it to remember. So great, it's going to help me remember to always text Wendy's mobile number from now on. Kudos, AI. We needed you for this. So the reason I was texting the lovely Wendy is because we only had one stamp. And so I said, text the lovely Wendy. And it said, what do you want to text her? And I said, I only see one stamp in the secretary. Does that seem right? And instead of sending the text message, Gemini said, I'm not sure what a secretary is. Is that some sort of furniture? Maybe if you tell me what it is, I can help you determine whether or not you need more stamps. I didn't want it to answer the question. I wanted it to send the question. So I re-emphasized that it was texting the lovely Wendy and to send the question. It did so. And then I said, I've got a new rule for you. From now on, when I'm texting somebody a question, I want you to send the question, not answer the question. That's the new rule. Remember, I want to know what's wrong with you.
What's wrong with you?
If you'd like to submit a question, topic, or tell me how I was wrong, you can email me at listen@thewrongpodcast.com or submit a comment at my website, thewrongpodcast.com. And help me spread the wrong message. If you like what you hear, share it with your friends. And don't forget to hit that subscribe button. That really does help. Now it's time for my favorite part of the show. I was wrong.
I was wrong. Oh, 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 I was wrong.
My last episode, I talked about the New York Football Giants kicker Young Ho Koo. And listener Brian wrote in and said,
Asians are allowed to play football? Why would you say that?
Because it's true, Brian. Asians are allowed to play football. And how dare you think they're not allowed to play? Just kidding. That's not what Brian was saying. Brian, of course, thinks Asians are allowed to play football. He's questioning why I felt the need to even clarify that Asians are allowed to play football, because of course they're allowed to play football. And I will just point out again, the kicker's name was Young Ho Koo. That seems a little foreign in the American football scene. And we all know that there is a number of people who don't think that somebody with the name Young Ho Koo is likely to show up on a football field. Issue number 3, gratitude. I recently said something on Facebook. I had this comparison of Joseph Smith and Donald Trump. Not important for this episode, but a friend of mine is, she's somebody who grew up in the Community of Christ, the Reorganized Church of Latter-day Saints. It's the second largest group of Mormon churches. And she wrote to me, and I thought this was a great topic for discussion. So with listener Lisa's permission, here is what Lisa had to say to me. And it doesn't have anything to do with Joseph Smith. That's just what kind of kicked off the conversation between us.
There is something that has bothered me for a long time. It seems like a lot of the evangelicals are so down on Trump. But Donald Trump has paid evangelicals the utmost respect by making possible the one thing they have always said they wanted, and that was the most important thing to them. Donald Trump put the Supreme Court justices on the court that sent Roe versus Wade back to the states. In my opinion, all the other politicians who came before him played the evangelicals. They talked like abortion was this big evil, and then after they were elected to office, completely blew the evangelicals off. They played them for fools. I remember going to a Marco Rubio rally and really wanting to hear talk of plans for the economy, jobs. But the warm-up speaker instead starts talking about banning abortion. I'm against abortion too, but I thought there were other more urgent issues that needed to be discussed. That's all I ever heard from the evangelicals. Trump has given them the one thing they wanted most, and that they said was the most important thing to them. Now, I know that it is unreasonable to expect evangelicals to pay a total blind eye to all the president's many faults and sins. But I see no gratitude from them at all, which to me is distressing.
Thank you, Lisa. This is something I've been meaning to get to, and I'm going to praise Donald Trump. I'm going to go through a number of things I think Donald Trump has done well. And for some of you, this is going to be very hard to listen to. I am not a person who thinks Donald Trump is a fascist. I don't think that's the correct word to use for him. He for sure likes authoritarianism, but if you were a fascist, you wouldn't have walked away from the presidency after declaring that you were cheated in 2020. If you were a fascist, you would have overturned Obamacare. Donald Trump is not a fascist, though there are certain qualities of him that might rhyme with fascism, for sure. I understand why people are tempted to use the word, but I am not the kind of person who calls him a fascist. I've heard Chris Christie say that if you were in the room with Donald Trump, you would like him. He is He's magnanimous. I'm sure Chris Christie didn't use that word because he knew he couldn't say it. He's a likable person. He's charismatic. He is the biggest person in the room. You would be drawn to him and you would like him. I think that would be true of me too. I would find things I like about Donald Trump. I would think he was funny. Some people cannot hear that. They think he is only evil, and everything he has done is awful and evil and the worst of the entire history of America. And I don't necessarily think that's true of Donald Trump. So if that's a problem for you, please know I'm not going to say very, very much negative about Donald Trump in this segment. You can go back and listen to my previous episodes. If you think I'm a sycophant for Donald Trump, please go listen to my previous episodes. I very clearly am not a person in the camp with Donald Trump. And I'm doing this so that I can eventually get to Lisa's point that I'm not showing gratitude to Donald Trump. Why am I not more grateful? Before I get to that, let me just clarify that she is not talking about all evangelicals, because if anybody is grateful for Donald Trump and is enthusiastic about Donald Trump, it is the evangelicals. Evangelicals are his core support. His core support is mostly made up of evangelicals. That's not true of all evangelicals. I'm an evangelical. I am not a supporter. But by and large, most of the people who like Donald Trump are evangelicals. There is a subset of us who don't like Donald Trump. And Lisa raises a good point. Why are we not more grateful? First off, I am grateful that Donald Trump prevented both Hillary Clinton and Kamala Harris from becoming president. I don't think either one of them were qualified to be president. I didn't vote for either one. I didn't vote for Donald Trump either, but I could not bring myself to vote for Clinton or Harris. I am glad they were not president. He did his job. He kept them from becoming president. One of the first things he did was massive tax cuts. I like people having their own money. I think that's a good thing. I want people to be in charge of their own money. I'm grateful for his tax cuts. In general, the United States has become a net exporter of energy. We create and ship out more oil than we bring in. We're not energy independent, and our net export doesn't free us from the world global oil market by any means. It would be impossible to do that. We're not an isolationist country when it comes to energy. That's impossible. But we produce more oil than we bring in now. I think that's a good thing. He has made that possible. Criminal justice reform. This is kind of on the down low, but he signed into law some serious federal criminal justice reform that needed to happen. And there should have been more talk about this. And it was good and fruitful and continues on to this day. The Defense Production Act, he invoked that during the COVID pandemic. I thought this was a very good idea. He got companies to focus their efforts on making sure that we could get through the pandemic in the quickest way possible. And the best thing he did was Operation Warp Speed. Hands down, I'm going to always praise him for Operation Warp Speed. This is how he gave money to pharmaceutical companies, and he cleared the path. He lowered some bureaucratic speed bumps so that they could produce the vaccine against COVID-19 as quickly as possible. And there are people who are screaming right now because this was the absolute worst thing he could have done, as far as they're concerned, because they hate vaccines and they think this vaccine is a killer. And I don't see it. As far as I can tell, this vaccine saved lives, and it's continuing to save lives. And it's turning out that people who got vaccinated for COVID-19 are now much more likely to live if they get diagnosed with lung cancer. And the vaccine, to be sure, was not everything that we were promised it was going to be. We were told that the vaccine would lower transmission, and it didn't substantially do that. But it did make it less likely for people to die if they had the vaccine. That is a very good thing. And then the fact that they got this vaccine out as quickly as possible is a credit to Donald Trump. It really is. He did the right thing, and lives were saved because of it. In both his first and second term, he has closed the southern border. there's a lot that needs to happen politically for our immigration system to get fixed. There's about 8 different things I could name that need to happen. Closing the southern border is one of them. And getting the other 7 through, it's going to require the border being closed before people feel comfortable enough to say, okay, you're here illegally. We're going to go ahead and give you amnesty. We may not necessarily give you citizenship, but we're going to say that you can stay. You've been here for 20 years. You're paying your taxes. People aren't going to go for that kind of thing until the southern border is closed. And he has prioritized closing the southern border. I think remain in Mexico was a good idea for people who are coming from Guatemala or Costa Rica or Ecuador, wherever they might be coming from. I think what he has done there is good. Lina Khan was the FTC commissioner for Joe Biden, and she is the main reason all of those tech bros lined up behind Donald Trump. Jeff Bezos and Mark Zuckerberg and everybody else in Silicon Valley who has $1 billion got behind Donald Trump. And the reason they got behind Donald Trump is because of Lina Khan. And Lina Khan created a very hostile environment for businesses. She made it hard for businesses to grow. She made it hard for businesses to merge. She is an anti-business ideologue. And she is the main reason Donald Trump got so much money from Silicon Valley. I think it's good that Lina Khan is gone. I think a pro-business environment is the right thing. And Donald Trump has instituted that. Selling weapons to Europe for Ukrainian defense is a good idea. We have these weapons. We have these defense capabilities. We have all these defensive companies here in the United States. I love that Donald Trump is allowing Ukraine to use these weapons as long as somebody's buying them. And having the other European countries buy them is great. I would love for us to support Ukraine more. But at minimum, this is great. It's great for the United States. It's great for Ukraine. It's bad for Russia. That is good. The return of the Israeli hostages. You cannot underestimate what Donald Trump did to make that happen. He supported Israel. It's clear the United States was supporting Israel in intelligence and in weapons and allowing Israel to buy weapons. And Donald Trump was putting the right political pressure on Iran and Hamas and Hezbollah. And eventually, the hostages were returned. Not all of them living, but their bodies were returned. It is a good thing that those hostages were returned. Donald Trump deserves praise and gratitude for that. Along those lines, the destruction of Hamas has been a very good thing. The October 2025 bombings of Iran and their nuclear facilities was a very good thing. That worked out. That went well. That led to the Israeli hostages being returned. Weakening Iran in a number of different ways was an important step into defeating Hamas. And Donald Trump has ended wokeism. Donald Trump is responsible for wokeism. Wokeism was always there. It will remain there. It's always going to be here in some form. Wokeism was a overreaction to Donald Trump. Progressives didn't know what to do about Donald Trump, what to do about their strong feelings about somebody like Donald Trump coming to power, and they overreacted and they became self-righteous and they created cancel culture in a reaction to Donald Trump. And political parties only change when they lose. That's the only way you're ever going to see a political party do something different. And Donald Trump getting elected for the second time made it very clear to progressives that wokeism wasn't working and they needed to cut it out. They needed to turn down the volume because all it did was cause Donald Trump to come to power once again. And then finally, Donald Trump nominated Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, and Comey Barrett to the Supreme Court. And because of them, Roe versus Wade was overturned. Roe versus Wade was a very problematic Supreme Court decision. the Supreme Court basically invented law and passed this thing called Roe v. Wade, which required abortion to be legal in all 50 states. And overturning Roe doesn't mean that abortion is now illegal. It means the states can set their own laws about it. And it is the first step into making abortion unthinkable in the United States. It is not the last step, it is the first step. And before I get more into Roe versus Wade, I want conservatives on the Supreme Court. Conservatives on the Supreme Court, Federalist judges, judges who are members of the Federalist Society, they believe that you have to follow the rules. That's the basic idea of conservatism. If it's written down, then you do that. Whatever the rule is, you do it. And it doesn't matter if it's bad or good. The court, the judges, are umpires. And if the rules need to change, we have a mechanism to do that through Congress. And judges don't get to pick their own rules. They don't get to decide what's just. You trust the American people to come up with what is good and just and praiseworthy in the law. And it's not right for judges to do that. It's only right for judges to say what the law says. And they have come out with a number of decisions that I have really, really liked. And many of those decisions have really hurt Donald Trump, because Donald Trump doesn't believe in democracy, really. He is a democratically elected president, and he is operating mostly within the bounds of our democracy, but he would prefer something different than democracy. It gets in his way. He doesn't want to work with Congress, and he has tried to overcome Congress many times. And this Supreme Court has ruled against him more than any other president. He gets slapped down by the Supreme Court more frequently than any other president in the history of the United States. And it's because these conservative judges that he nominated say you have to follow the rules. And Donald Trump is not a big fan of the rules all the time. So these judges, they recognize that Roe v. Wade was invented out of thin air. It invented precedent and invented rights out of thin air that weren't written down, and they overturned it. And a friend of mine said, if Caligula himself was responsible for overturning Roe versus Wade, I would be grateful. And I feel the same way. I am grateful. I am grateful. I will say it right here for you, Lisa, and everybody else. I am grateful that Trump nominated these three justices and that Roe v. Wade was overturned. He did the right thing. It is one of the best things he did. I guess I earlier said Operation Warp Speed was the best thing he did. I'll take that back. It was the second best thing he did. The best thing he did was nominate these three justices to the Supreme Court. Earlier, I said that overcoming abortion does not end with overturning Roe versus Wade. It's the start. It's the first thing that needs to happen. There is a cultural and legal problem that both need to be overcome. And the legal issue was caused by Roe versus Wade. And that has been removed. We have a door open now. The problem is we have to get the rest of the culture to walk through the door. And it is very difficult to solve the cultural problem when you have a womanizing bully as the leader of the pro-life movement. The culture is not likely to walk through the door of ending abortion with you if they don't trust the guy who's leading the cause. And this is one of the things that bothers me most about Donald Trump, is he doesn't believe in the right process. Process is important. You have to convince people to go along with you. And if you don't follow the rules, then people are going to reject what you want to do. They're going to recognize that you're not following the rules, and they're not going to go along. People don't like bullies. They're not going to go along with a bully. I think the United States should make Greenland a territory of the United States. I think that's a good idea. When Donald Trump started saying that he wanted that too, I thought, oh no, this is awful. Because now people are going to go against it just because he said that he wants to do that. And Then he went about it in the worst way possible. You don't make Greenland a territory of the United States by telling your own allies, maybe we'll just attack you and take it from you. That's a bad idea. That's the worst way to get it. We should buy it. That would be a good idea. We have enough money to buy it. It would be to our advantage over the long haul to buy it. But to attack an ally, to attack a friend and take it from them, that's a bad idea. You aren't going to have friends for very long. You need your friends. In the same way, I don't want Donald Trump leading the charge for ending abortion. He is going to do it in the worst way I can imagine. And people are going to hate the very idea because they're not going to want to go along with him. I don't know if you've noticed this. Donald Trump isn't a very popular politician. He's extremely popular with the 30% of people who like him. And he caps out at that 30%. He might be at 34% right now. You can't get things done with 34% of the country on your side. You need a lot more than that, particularly with something like abortion that's been around, it's been a part of our country for the last 50 some odd years. And something that many people are unaware of is that since Roe v. Wade was overturned and since Trump has become president, abortions have gone up. Many states have made them against the law. And despite that, the number of abortions has gone up. It's counterintuitive. And I'm not saying that Donald Trump is the reason abortions have gone up. Monocausal explanations are almost always wrong. I'll say that again. Monocausal explanations are almost always wrong. Donald Trump is not the reason abortions have gone up, but he is a reason that can't be ignored. I think that abortion should be illegal. It doesn't get past me that we have the lowest abortion rate in our history while Barack Obama was president. There were reasons that made people think that hope was available to them. They had some reason to think that they could bring unwanted children into healthy, productive lives without killing them early. There's something about the current economics and social and cultural environment that make people think that abortion really is probably the best idea for them. And you cannot ignore how Donald Trump has affected the culture of the United States. As far as him following through on getting Roe versus Wade overturned, you need to understand that this was a fluke of history. He is the only president to get to nominate, I should say the only president in modern history to get to nominate three justices in his first term. That doesn't happen. Roe versus Wade only got overturned because he was able to nominate three justices. And one of the reasons he was able to do that was because Mitch McConnell manipulated things to his advantage. Mitch McConnell stole a justice from Barack Obama. He did not allow Barack Obama to nominate somebody when it was his right to do that. He really did steal it. There's no other way. It was the worst political shenanigans that I can think of in my lifetime that Mitch McConnell took this nomination away from Barack Obama. That was one nomination that Trump did not deserve. The other was that Ruth Bader Ginsburg held on until the day she died. And it was clear to people before Trump was president that she wasn't going to make it through the next 4 years. And she could have stepped down and allowed Barack Obama to replace her. She did not. Now, that's likely to happen again with somebody like Clarence Thomas. But that is a fluke. You cannot count on a Supreme Court justice dying while you're president of the United States. And that fluke of history happened to hit Donald Trump, and he did his job. He said he would nominate Federalist Society justices, and he did. He didn't do anything that Marco Rubio wouldn't have done if he was president. He didn't do anything that Ted Cruz wouldn't have done if he was president. If Mitt Romney, I almost called him Mitch Romney, because Mitch McConnell, that's why. If Mick Romney, his name isn't Mick. Why am I calling him Mick Romney? His name, he's not Irish. He's Mitt Romney. If Mitt Romney had been president, he too would have nominated those three justices, or justices very similar to them. Donald Trump did his job. He did what he said he was going to do. He didn't do anything unique, though. He just got lucky with the situation. A friend of mine, he likes to say that Donald Trump is the most pro-life president in American history. And this is not at all true. He happened to do the thing that was the most consequential for the pro-life movement in American history. But he is not the most pro-life president in American history. Donald Trump is pro-choice. He just happens to be slightly less pro-choice than Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and Hillary Clinton. And he has made the Republican Party a pro-choice party. He is a very transactional person. And he wanted to win the presidency as a Republican. And the only way he could do that was to say, if you give me the presidency, I will give you the justices. And he upheld his side of the bargain. And then he immediately cut the pro-life movement out of the Republican Party. Go look at his platform for the 2020 election. Go look at his platform for the 2024 election. You will not see anything about the pro-life movement in either one. In fact, he's worked against the pro-life movement ever since then. In this presidency, he has done things that are against the pro-life movement. He is funding Planned Parenthood. He is funding IVF. He is not preventing the abortion drug from being shipped nationwide from anywhere in the country. He could shut that down. He is not doing that. He is a pro-choice president. The Republican Party is no longer a pro-life party, and it is extremely difficult legally and politically for the pro-life party to move forward without one of the two major parties in its corner. There's no political path forward. There isn't a pro-life party available to the pro-life movement. And that is something that needed to be considered when nominating Donald Trump. What are we going to do when this pro-choice person cuts us out? And he did. It was short-term gain for long-term disadvantage. And I have to ask, what does gratitude mean? Do I have to go along with abuse and incompetence and corruption out of gratitude? I've said I'm grateful. I recognize what he did. I give him the proper respect for doing what he said he was going to do. But now that he's done it, and he's cut me out, he's cut the pro-life movement out of the political landscape, how much more gratitude do I need to give him? He doesn't want anything to do with my ideals or goals. Shouldn't he be more grateful to the pro-life movement? Shouldn't there be more gratitude from him? There's no gratitude from him. He's done with us. We're out. He doesn't want anything to do with us anymore. The deal is over. He is the one who ended it. I'm going to give an analogy. Some people, not you, if you're listening to this podcast, this is not you at all. You're smart. You're savvy. You know how to metaphor. Some people don't know how to metaphor. This is an analogy. It is a metaphor. I am not saying that Donald Trump is a child abuser. This is a metaphor. But imagine a woman, the one thing she wants more than anything in life is to become a mother. She wants children. And a man helps her become a mother. What does she owe the father of her children? She owes him some gratitude, to be sure. He made her a mother. He gave her children. But what if that man goes on to hurt her children? What if he becomes abusive? What if he is doing everything he can to make sure that her children don't flourish? What kind of gratitude does she owe him? She will always have to say, yes, he's the father of my children. I am grateful that I have children. I'm grateful that these children are in my life. But if he's going to hurt her children, if he's going to prevent them from flourishing, she has to walk away from him at some point. She has to point out that this person is not helping me. This person is not helping my children. He's not helping the things I care about the most. But I could be wrong. If you think I am, let me know. Let me know why. I had fun, and I hope you did too. Buh-bye.